Welcome back to the Mac Express. I'm Michael Cruciati, and today we've got a special edition, the September Show Jumping Recap, a recap of the September International Show Jumping Circuit, all the riders, the competitions, and the results, and everything in between. And also joining me today is none other than Kevin Babington, and going to provide an incredible insider scoop to the sport of show jumping. Kevin, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Michael. It's good to be here.
It's going to be a lot of fun in this discussion today, because one of your favorite things is watching classes and watching the competition. And it was quite a September for the American show jumper, Kent Farrington, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. Incredible. There's so many competitions to watch right now, it's hard to stay up on everything.
Everything from Europe to US to, I mean, I don't remember the last time I've seen so many five stars in a single month.
It's amazing. I mean, there's more five stars in a month now than there was in 6 months prior to this.
What's interesting is I've talked to a lot of riders, and before it was the best place to get results and ranking points was in the Nations Cups. But now that there's so many five stars, it's like you can either do both and still get amazing ranking points.
Yes, and what I like to see is so many riders were going abroad to get points, and now they can stay here. You know, like the likes of Kent, we're not losing him off to Europe. He can stay in the States, and there's a five-star almost every weekend.
And before we get into the results of this month, what has your experience been in the difference in competition from the European side to the U.S. side? Because a lot of people ask, like, when the European riders come to WEF and stuff, they sometimes dominate, like Christian Kukuk doing amazing things at the Rolex five-star. Like, what is the difference in competition that you've seen throughout your career in Europe versus the U.S.?
Well, I think from a course designer's point of view, they look at the overall field. And I think the overall standard of riding in Europe was better. Like they had when you're looking down through the world ranking list and you've got six or seven of the top 10 riders in your field, and then the following 30 are not too bad. You know, you have to set the course to that standard. And what you'd find in Europe is it's hard to qualify for the Grand Prix, whereas sometimes in the US, they have to take everybody because they're trying to fill the class.
Oh, know? Interesting.
Yeah, you see that a lot. So it could be a five-star, but they don't have enough five-star riders, qualified five-star riders, to get the number they're looking for. So you get some weak links in the class. But that's getting less and less as the standard is improving in the US. And that's the beauty of, it's going to take time, but that's the beauty of having more five stars in the, so now we're drawing Europeans over here rather than drawing Americans to Europe. You know, the Europeans are looking at, okay, we don't have to kill our horses. It's easier to qualify. And there's very good prize money. It makes sense for us to send our horses to the States. And I think just give it a few years. It's going to take time. I think the standard of riding is really going to increase here in America.
Really?
I really think so. Because, you can just already see from September, like, any of those rounds that Kent is winning, I don't think there's anybody in Europe could beat those, you know. Christian Kukuk would have to be on the top of his game, and I still don't think he could beat those times, you know.
Well, what's incredible is the consistency that Kent has shown on multiple horses. Now, his horses that are at the top form, specifically Greya, he got them when they were younger, so he's really molded them to his style of riding. But, like, the consistency, I don't care what type of horses, that is off the charts.
It is, but there's a lot to be said to get them younger. I really believe that, especially for a professional. Like, I think it's important to, like, put your stamp on a horse. Like, there's one thing if you're an amateur and you're moving into that level and you want a horse to just work through your help you out in your mistakes. But I think if you're, for me, I've always had much better luck getting a horse to mold to my system. Every rider is different. And you've seen it over and over again where somebody goes out top rider, they go out and spend 5-10 million on a horse and it's a disaster. You know, they might be on paper, they might be a better rider than the horse, the rider they bought it from, but the horse doesn't mold to their system. It takes time, mm-hmm. you know, and it could be something as simple as you might have a different system of flatting the horse, and it could be something as simple about how much time you give the horse in between. There's a lot of factors that can affect, you know, the outcome. But when you buy them younger, they learn your system. You understand them more. You understand the positives and negatives from your training. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very important. And I love to see that Kent is doing that. I really do. And I wish more riders would do that. You know, if you're a top rider and you've got a couple of top horses, to me, a real professional, you're producing young horses behind that. You're not waiting for your owner to buy the next superstar out there.
So you're building up your string 3-4 years in advance, knowing that you have 2 or 3 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds,
exactly,
8-year-olds.
Exactly. Like you look at, for example, Lanigan there last week. You still see a lot of top riders in Europe riding young horses, right? Okay, Christian Allman is involved with Zangazar. He's married to the owner of Zangazar, so he has to be involved. But you still see plenty of top riders out there, you know, competing, and they may have other riders producing them a little bit at home, but they're very involved. Mm-hmm. You know, they know what they have coming behind them, and to me, that's very, very important. We need to see more of that in the States. I think what we run into in the States, it's quite expensive to produce a young horse.
Yeah,
you know, so you end up with so much money tied up in them if they don't work out,
right,
that you're in trouble. You know, if they do work out, great. It's a drop in the ocean, but they don't all work out.
No, even if you had a great system where you have the 6, 7, 8-year-olds, I mean, just the odds of all of them working out is very slim. And that's what's so impressive with what Ken's done with his current string, is that they're not a massive string, especially the young ones, but each one of them seemed to have worked out.
He's very clever at picking horses. Like he has a type that he likes. If you're going over and buying 2 and 3-year-olds, it's very, very difficult. But if you're buying 5, 6, 7, 8-year-olds, you have a pretty good understanding of how their technique, their blood, will they carry that on into their career. Like some horses may start out with blood, mm-hmm. but the more training you do, they go colder, right? And I've seen it work the other way around. I've had horses that are a little bit cold starting out, and you're always thinking, will they come into blood, you mm-hmm. know? And you build your training around that to see if you can promote a way for them to come into blood. You don't want to drill their brain. You don't want to dumb them down too much. Mm-hmm. You want to let them be horses a little bit. You want to let them be fresh. Mm-hmm. I think there's a whole science behind that. And our feeling probably is you have to say, okay, this horse could do it a week in the field or do it a week of doing nothing, and then they come back better, you know. And you know, I used to say that even about Shorapur, you know, you'd give her a day off, she'd come back a little better. You'd give her 2 days off, and then you'd be forced to give her 3 days off. And then all of a sudden, she's beautiful to ride. So you learn from that and you go, you know, I'm going to work her hard for 3 or 4 days, but then I'm going to give her a break. Mm-hmm. And is it her body healing from an ailment that you don't know of? Is it her... just her mind being able to relax for a few days? I think you build off that. Hmm. And I think that's what good riders can feel.
Yeah.
You know.
And so when you did that, would that be 2 or 3 days hard training and then leading into a show week where you'd give them Monday through Thursday off? Or what would that kind of schedule look like?
It varied. it varied. She would tell me when she needed a break. Mm-hmm. So I had to be careful not to do too much before the show, like the 2 days before the show. Like, she was a very fresh horse, and she was a bit, she was always aggressive at the jumps. So you always thought, okay, work her down before the show. But sometimes that would backfire on you. So I found quite often, give her a couple of days off before the show, you know, and she came out better for it. She came out more relaxed and more rideable for it.
Okay. You know? Yeah, because I don't think if I had the opportunity, I don't think the top riders would tell me what their strategies are. Because, like, I'd love to just be a fly on the wall and, like, what is each one of them, what is their lead up to a big competition look like? Because that would be really interesting.
It would vary from horse to horse. It really would vary from horse to horse. Like, some horses, you give them a couple of days off before the competition, they're unrideable, mm-hmm. you know. And so... And listen, it's I'm not saying I always got the formula right. I'm sure there was many a times I didn't. I can't read their brain, but you would try to feel what they're trying to tell you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, unfortunately, fortunately, you can't talk to them, because I figured if you could talk to them, you'd have a bunch of hypochondriacs in the barn and you'd get nothing accomplished and they'd want to be out in the field the whole time. You know?
Yeah, where's my acupuncturist? Where's my massage therapist? Yeah, and then I'm bugging off to the...
I need a week off. I've got, like a young kid, I've got the flu this morning. I can't go to school.
You know? Are you sure you're really sick?
Yeah.
Which, not that this podcast is going to be all about Kent, but I mean, what he's done in September is pretty much unprecedented.
It's unbelievable. It's just, you know, he's in a league of his own. I mean, there's no question. Mm-hmm. And it's hats off. I have the utmost respect for what he's done. Every rider does. How can you not? Yeah. And, but he really is in a league of his own. And it's just, it's incredible to watch.
Yeah, because 3 5-stars in the month of September. And as a high-level competitor as you were, how much of it is the training and preparation? How much is it when you're hot, you're hot? Like, it's your time and you're consistent week after week.
Well, yeah, I think it's like he knows what buttons to push and he knows how far to push it. Like, when you look at Greya, she is... Her balance is so correct. Her technique is so correct. So he can take a chance on the angles. Like, he can really, like, he can dare her into a double. Her technique, the more you dare her, the better the technique gets. Mm-hmm. And but she wasn't always like that. So a lot of that comes from his training, from his program. And he is such a planner. Like, he's a natural rider, but he's also a planner. And so he knows every stride, like every step he's going to take on course. Mm-hmm. And like, I think back, I go back and watch some of my rounds and stuff like that. I wish I was so technical, you know. You did it kind of off the seat of your pants, and sometimes it paid off and sometimes it didn't. But like, if you watch his rounds, he is... Every step is organized. He knows exactly how many strides he's going to do. Mm-hmm. If it's 11 strides on a bend, you know he has a number in the back of his head. I could never ride 11 strides on a bend, you know. but what I also have always admired about Kent is he's not afraid to get stuck in on a horse. Like, if a horse kinks in a corner or if a horse falls out of balance, he's right there. Like, he can be a seat of the pants rider too. So he's got everything going for him. Like,
yeah, go a little deeper into that, because I mean, I'm not experienced in that level of, I kind of know what I'm seeing, but like, so when you say you get stuck in a corner, is when the horse kind of gets lost in the corner, or what are you meaning when you
talk
about
that? Well, for instance, like, if you're, let's say you're making a left turn and the horse is a left bulge, that you're riding your plan, you're riding 8 strides on the corner, the next thing the horse drops its shoulder. He just doesn't sit pretty, you know. He's not afraid to really lift the shoulder, and, you know, he's not all about how he looks in the tack. He feels what's happening in under him, and he can get like whether you have to get into the horse's mouth or whether you have to really pick the shoulders up, you'll see him. If you watch his hands, he's not afraid to make a strong correction.
Oh,
you know?
So he's actively riding the
yes,
corners. Got
he's
it.
Actively riding, and he's he can sit like he's a beautiful rider to watch, but he's also, you know, he's ridden enough tough horses in his career where he feels the horse falling out of balance, and he can make a strong correction where maybe it takes away from the picture of the round, mm-hmm. but it helps to win the class.
Got it. And when do you think he's doing this planning? Because like everybody does the course walk. Do you think he's actually mapping out during the course walk, or do you think it's something that he's doing while he's watching the rounds going before him?
It's mapped out way before. Because like if you watch some of the rounds he's won, he's gone early in the course, mm-hmm. early in the jump off, like second or first, and so the other riders are having to chase him, right? So it's not that he's had a chance to watch four or five go. And to be honest, like when you're, even if you go a little bit later in the jump off, it has to be a long list of rides. Like there has to be, you know, 10 or 12 for you to really take in the jump off.
Mm.
Your mind, and it's hard to watch on the screen. You know, you can take a lot from the screen. He's got great people on the ground giving him information, but I think for me, I had to have my plan mapped out. I had to, you know, if somebody said, okay, there definitely is a seven in the eight line you walk, that's great information, mm. right? He's got it all mapped out ahead of time. He knows exactly what his horse is capable of doing. I bet his plan doesn't change much from what he has mapped out, even if he goes late in the order.
Yeah, that's a perfect example, like at the Gold Cup, and where James Can Cruz and Shane Sweetenham, I mean, they were on it that day,
yeah.
and they still couldn't touch Greya. Like, that was just amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, and then speaking of Shane, like, and Can Cruz, look at that. I mean, what consistency he's had. Like, there's no shame in being second to Kent. I was second to Kent in Dublin, okay? And one of the Grand Prix, like every Irish rider dreams of winning. And Kent, of course, comes and, you know, makes me look like a schoolboy. You know, it's like, you know. But at the same time, I was a happy person to be second to Kent in Dublin. You know,
that's a good paycheck.
Yeah, it's a good paycheck. And like Shane, I actually sent him a message there last week, and I said, like, the consistency he's had is amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. And if we could have taken Kent out of the picture, he'd have a lot of five-star wins on his on his resume, you know. And like the sport has become so competitive now that like you'd watch around early in a jump off, and you say, well, nobody is catching that. That rider might end up fourth. Mm-hmm. It's just incredible. Like the standard of horses, the standard of riding, the standard of course designing, it's changed a lot just in 5 years, mm-hmm. you know, and because the sport is getting more and more competitive. And I think riders are becoming more sportsmen than you had to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like now you have to, like if you look at a lot of the riders, they're fitter, they're more focused, they're planners, they're, you know, you could show up, you know, you had a good horse, you'd go in and, you know, everybody was a good rider and you had a good understanding of, you know, your plan, the risks you could take on your horse, but you did it more off feeling.
Mm.
But now there's a combination of feeling and getting the riders are getting fitter. They have a better understanding of the nutrition of their horses.
Yeah.
There's so much that goes into it right now. And I think Writers are looking for every little angle they can take, like other sports people.
Well, it's funny you bring that up. So most of my background is in college football. And so when I was playing, and it was right at the tail end, and we called it the bigger, faster, stronger era, where it wasn't a concussion, it was you just got your bell rung.
Yeah.
And the time period from when I stopped playing in the early 2010s to the 2020s now, it's every little piece. It's the nutrition. It's the training plan. It's the coaching. I mean, every little piece. And what's amazing, and you said it perfectly, show jumping is catching up to that too.
Yes.
Where it's the whole team. It's what the horse's nutrition is. What supplements are they getting? How are they feeling that day? I mean, it's the whole picture.
Yes, yes. And I think to be at the top of the sport, you need to have your finger on the pulse on everything, you know. And the rider has to be the one overseeing that. You know, you can have a great manager. And I think most of these operations, you hear these riders, like when they're doing their interviews, there's a laundry list of people for them to thank in the background.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't do it without a team. You have to have top grooms nowadays. You have to have, the riders are traveling so much from show to show. Like, you know, you look at any of the riders, Ken, Shane, Daniel, any of the Blumens, any of the Coils, you look at them. The one minute they're in America, the next minute they're in Europe, the next minute they're in Spruce Meadows. But for you to be able to do that, somebody has to be flatting the horses. Somebody has to be, you know, you have to have different grooms in different countries at the same week. And, you know, there's no way your top groom can be in Paris and then back in Traverse City within 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
If they're in charge of taking care of those horses, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much goes into it. And the background team is just as important as the rider.
All right. So the last part of our little segment is, before the new world rankings come out, who's your top three right now?
I think there's nobody touching Kent at the moment. Where are we standing right now?
Yeah, so Kent's number one, Ben Mayer number two, Christian number three, Richard four, Scott five. That's the top five right now.
I don't see it changing, really. There's nobody touching Kent. Ben has such a great string of horses right now. Maybe this last month wasn't his best month.
Mm-hmm.
Still had a good month.
Yeah.
But it might not have... normally he picks one off, you know. And I was watching him at Vienna yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just the cheapest rail, you know. And he's always won, even with Kenton in the ring. I'm sure Kent is nervous but they haven't been competing against each other a lot lately.
Yeah.
You know,
that'd be a great competition.
Yeah,
great jump off.
Yeah. And he has been a such a strong string. He has multiple horses to pick from right now,
mm-hmm.
which is great for him you know, and, Ginger Blue. He had Ginger Blue out last night and, I love that horse. I love that horse. And that's, it probably isn't his top string horse,
mm-hmm.
but it's still a very, very competitive horse. And, you know, he was very unlucky. I thought it was a very, very light rail he had. And he's always one that you have to look out for in the jump off,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was late in the order. And I think everybody was excited to see him go. So, it's unfortunately he didn't make the jump off. I think he was just hung on in the results as a fast four falter,
mm-hmm.
but he's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah,
depends on what happens with the rankings from this month, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if he falls out of one place, he'll be back in there.
Yeah, I think so, too. I don't think there's going to be much of a shakeup between one and three. The one that I think, and this is my dark horse, that's going to start approaching pretty quickly, probably in the next 6 months to at least the top 10, if not the top five, probably a year and a half, is Carl. I think Carl has the string. I think he's starting to really get that mentality of how to really win the big class. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of him in that top 10.
Yes. Just watching him, when he comes out, his record must be outstanding. But he's not going to chase the points too much, I don't think. Mm-hmm. He is a believer. He really kind of feels his horses. He has a great string at the moment, but he doesn't impress me as the type of rider that's going to put too much weight on the world standing, because it may just happen. Mm-hmm. But I like his approach. Like he gives the horses time. He's not running all over the world. Back-to-back weeks. He went from Travers over. He was jumping in on the Nations Cup.
Yep.
And he managed to win the Grand Prix there, which was brilliant. I'm sure he was really glad he went. The Nations Cup didn't go their way, but it was lovely to see him win the Grand Prix. And but he wouldn't be one to jump back and forth too much. I think he'd, he works with Eric, and Eric is a great horseman, and they put the horses first.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is quite a special episode that we were able to record today. For everybody who wants to follow Show Jumping, make sure to check into Clip My Horse TV, where you can watch every round. And if you want to make sure and follow Kevin and what he's up to, make sure to follow the Kevin Babington Foundation. And Kevin, thank you so much for joining us in the podcast today.
Okay, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Cool. And this is the Mac Express. We'll catch you next time.